Long before Sturt and the explorers that came before and after him, the Corner Country has been home to many different traditional owner nations. Dr. Lorena Barker is a descendant of the Wongamurra and Murawari people of northwest New South Wales. Her life work as an oral historian, filmmaker, poet and artist pieces together the oral and documented histories of traditional owners in the Tibooburra and Corner Country areas. A big piece of that story in recent history was the 1938 removal, when authorities showed up to the Tibooburra Mission, giving local traditional owners just 2 hours to load their families and belongings onto trucks to be removed to the Brewarrina Mission, more than 500 kilometres away. Dr. Barker shares with us how language, culture, and connection to country have remained strong through lives working on the land and stories and language hidden under the guise of gospel songs.
My name's Lorena Barker. I'm a Wongamurra Murawari woman from northwest New South Wales. My own country is Tibooburra in the far west region. I'm also a descendant of the Kuma people in southwest Queensland, the Kunya people in southwest Queensland, the Adnamutten in the Flinders Ranges, the Barkindji, and also the Wiradjuri, and with all my 6 sets of great-grandparents. Wongamurra country is, and Tibooburra in particular, is the homelands of the Wongamurra. And we've always been connected to our country through our song lines, through the stories, and through the Muras, the great creators. Our country goes up to the Coopers Creek Basin, over to the Grey Range, down to Tibooburra, and down to Milparinka, where we meet the Mullingarpa, and westward to meet with the South Australian Yandawanta towards Inaminka, and east to meet with the Barkindji and the other western tribes. The Corner Country is my grandmother's homeland. And when our families in 1938 were trucked off to the old Brewarrina Mission, about 130 Wongamurra families and other Aboriginal families who were living at the old camp at Tibooburra were relocated and transported to the old Brewarrina Mission.
So that is a big part of the story out there, the experience of the Wongamurra on their own country. And lots of Indigenous people were removed in all kinds of ways. What's the story of the Wongamurra and their process of being removed?
The removal started because under the New South Wales education policy, you had to be clean, clad and courteous. And if you didn't fit those three, then you could be suspended or expelled from school. So a non-Indigenous person objected to their children sitting next to the Aboriginal kids in Tibooburra, and it was on those grounds. It took almost 5 years for the petition to the Department of Education with the community protesting about Aboriginal kids being in the school.
Wow.
The nearest school that was available to the Wongamurra children and the other Aboriginal children were on Brewarrina Mission, because at that time Menindee Mission was overcrowded and it was a vast mission as well, heavily populated.
Not to mention quite away from Tibooburra.
And a long way. The only available school then was the Aboriginal school on Brewarrina Mission, and in 1938... three trucks pulled up into the camp. The police inspector, the mission manager, they loaded the families up, the old men, the old women, the children. And so now oral histories and the stories that our grandparents told us was that they said they were taking the children. And if they didn't get on the trucks, they were going to take the children anyway. So everyone climbed. They had almost only 2 hours to pack up their belongings. They had to leave their livelihoods, their you know, the camels and some of their dogs, their livestock that they had, and all their other belongings. They could only take what they could fit into a suitcase. Some of the old elders wouldn't get on the back of the trucks unless their dogs came too. So in the archival photographs, you see those dogs on the back of the trucks, which are very rare photographs. So they were transported and then spent a few hours in Wunaring, and where the photographs, the archival photographs that were taken by Aunty Mayant with a brownie box camera. And so she took a series of photographs, and it has only just been recently through her granddaughter and her son, Uncle Harold, aunt, I was able to get the six photographs that she took on that day, wow. which you know, she had also family members that were on the back of that truck as well. And they pulled up near her house on the old Paru River. So they're very precious and very rare. And it was fortunate that they did stop at Wunaring, and she had a brownie box camera that was able to record and photograph what was happening. Mm. Because there's no other, there's the oral histories, but they're what Westerners would consider evidence, because they're photographs. Whereas with the 1936 removal of the Angledule, we have the oral histories and of the removal and what that experience was like. So during that period since, you know, 1883, Aboriginal people were being moved off country onto missions and reserves and fringes of white Australian society. And they started moving people from my father's country in on Murawari country at a very early stage, and the establishment of Brewarrina Mission. And the last lot of Murawari people that were on Milroy were moved in 1912, which included my great-grandfather, Jimmy Barker, and his family. Yeah, so when the trucks rolled into the camp, my great-grandfather, Jimmy Barker, was one of the drivers, and an old uncle called Dudley Dennis, and he was a Gumilroy man. And they were forced to drive those trucks, because the mission manager knew that if they didn't have Aboriginal drivers, then the Aboriginal people may or may not get on the back of the trucks. And if they didn't drive the trucks, then also their family wouldn't get any rations. So it was a planned exercise. So it took 5 years to do this. And with all the petitions and the lobbying. The Wankamara families were moved to Brewarrina Mission. They stayed there for 2 years, and so the oral histories, the stories that my nan told me about being on a mission. So my grandmother was on the back of those trucks, and in the first few years, a lot of our elders passed away, and they mourned and grieved for their own country, and so a lot of our grandparents still remain at the old mission, at the old mission cemetery. And we have oral history recordings from the elders, Auntie Laura Dixon, Uncle Knocker Ebsworth, my nan, Amy Elwood, her sister, Edith, and there's also recordings of my great-grandmother, Ruby Ebsworth.
It Brewarrina. Would have been quite a challenging time for two different communities to come and be forced to share resources and space, I imagine.
Well, there were many language groups at the old Brewarrina Mission. There was the Niyimba people, traditional owners of Brewarrina. They also moved the Wailawan, and of course then there was, you know, Murawari people. There was Yalioi and Gumilaroi people from the Walgett and Angledale regions. And there was the Wankamara people, there was some Mullingarpa people, even Yorta Yorta families. And then, of course, young girls like my great-grandmother, Evelyn, who were put out to service, the dormitories, the girls, young girls' dormitory. So she was in there and then would be sent out to work on the vast stations.
So before the removal, what kind of stories were you hearing about what life was like on the mission?
They were to be educated and Christianised. So, you know, they couldn't speak the language. That was the first thing my grandmother said was, "Knocked out of us." That's her expression. Though they found ways in which to incorporate language under the guise of gospel songs. So they would sing, you know, about the rainbow, and he brings the rainbow. You know, they're singing about the great creators. The missionaries would think that they were singing about God.
Right.
And so that song has been translated and sung in Yorta Yorta, and it's also been sung in Wankamara, but it's originally an Adnamutna song, which I just found out recently.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so my great-grandparents, Fred and Rachel Johnson, who are Adnamutna senior cultural knowledge holders, taught that song to my grandmother and her brothers and sisters, and they taught that to the kids on the mission. And it's only early this year that I heard the original archival version.
I want to hear
as it's sung in Adnamutna. And we've been singing that as part of the play that I co-wrote and direct with Julie Collins. It's a story about the removal. So we reenact the story based on all the oral histories.
Now, this brings us to some of the work that you've done as an academic, as an artist, exploring those stories, and you have found really interesting ways to tell them. Can you tell us a little bit about the process of collecting those oral histories and what kind of sent you on that journey?
I've always sat around with elders. I'm a campfire kid, so I learnt my cultural history and knowledge and proper cultural behaviour around sitting around with my grandparents around the campfire and listening to the stories, listening to the kinship stories and our relationship to country and the stories of the Muras. So what I've, as part of my who I am and my own, if you'd like, academic practice, is to incorporate my cultural way of doing things, ways of being with community elders, ways of listening to their stories and then being able to transform and translate those histories and knowledges into mediums that they can directly relate to. And I'm doing things that we have done for millennia and using modern technology to the best of our ability to be able to then transcend that well into the future, so to pass on that knowledge to the next generation. And so that history is never forgotten, particularly the history of the removal.
Did you grow up hearing the stories about the removal from a very young age?
Yeah. I've always known where we came from and where our own country. So my grandmother always told us that our country is Tipperborough. We're Wankamara people. My grandmother always, we knew that she lived and raised her children in Bourke, and Bourke is Niamba Barkindji, a lot of Niamba Barkindji people on country. She always knew where her homelands were, and that's what she passed on to us. Even though we were transported, our connections have never been severed, and we've maintained that really strong connection to our country through our songlines. So being told the stories of Gobawalaga and the flight and the path of the pelican, and knowing the story of the bronze-winged pigeon and how we got fire and obol in our country. And it was because, as part of that flight of the pelican, where he dropped his water and the fish became part of the what is now the Cooper Basin. So they're important, what the Wankamara and the Corner Country people refer to as the Murras. So Murri is everything. Murri is the great creators, but Murri is also the history, culture and knowledge. And so it's the oldest form of history. It's our history of our country. And the Murras that, what other language groups, I would have their own names. The Adnamatna have a similar word called Mudda, and Mudda is everything as well. It's quite similar, but it's the curling of the tongue, Mudda. And it sounds like mudda, and it depends on how you translate that then into English when you write it down.
So really accessing a piece of land is just one little piece of that connection that was interrupted.
Mm.
A connection to a place and to story and to history is bigger.
It's much bigger, yeah. And nobody can sever you from that. One of the things that our elders have done was always work on our country. So our great uncles and aunties, my nan's uncles and aunties, my nan's mum worked on vast properties. So they were being strategic as well to maintain connection for us. So to always make it okay for us to be able to return one day.
Mm.
To our own countries. So they always went home to Tibooburra. They worked in, Aramanga, Napa Mary stations in southwest Queensland and around the far western region. They worked as station hands, boundary riders, doggers, trappers, you name it. They pretty much did everything. But of course, when they were going there, they were also visiting and paying respects to the great ancestors and visiting our sacred sites in those places. It's those elders that then also left their cultural knowledge that was recorded by linguists and anthropologists in the late 1960s and 70s.
You're an academic, you're an artist. There's a lot of different things going on in your practice and probably your life's work is collecting these oral histories and looking for ways to share them. Tell us a little about that work.
Well, I'm an oral historian. So the difference between oral history, the discipline, and Indigenous oral history is for oral history, the discipline, there's methodologies and ways of doing interviews and recordings. Very technical and theoretical, and Indigenous oral history is who we are. It's part of our everyday life world. We live it every day, so our stories, it's a living history and culture. And so I'm doing what I've always meant to do. I'm practicing my culture by sitting down with my elders, capturing their stories and being able to translate and transform it, as we've always done for thousands of millennia.
Something that's kind of culminated in is your work Looking Through Windows. Can you talk us through that?
Well, Looking Through Windows was based on the oral histories, my nan's story about the removal and her experience of being on the back of that truck and being transported and what life was like on the Brewarrina Mission. So I sat down and had a yarn with her about it, and I turned her story into a poem called An Ode to My Grandmother. The poem actually tells the story of the Wankamara removal through my grandmother's eyes and through her lived experience. So the poem was transformed into the documentary, and we travelled from Brewarrina to Bourke to Wanaring, back to Tibooburra, and shared the story of the removal and the Wankamara people's removal based on all my grandmother's stories and experiences and other family and community members' oral histories. From the documentary, we created the first iteration of Looking Through Windows, which was a community exhibition. So I call that a film through 1,000 images. And it was using all the photographs that we took as part of that original film shoot and put it together in a community exhibition that we held in Bourke in 2016. And that was using materials that was all recycled and repurposed materials, so old window frames, so the old baked bean tins, rusty brake bean tins, corrugated iron, barbed wire. So it also represented what Aboriginal people's lives were like on the fringes of white Australian society, having to recycle and repurpose and make ounces out of whatever they can source, whole tents, pieces of rusty corrugated tin, whole oil drums, and they made ounces of whatever they could salvage.
It must have been incredible for the people that you collected the stories from to then come into a space and see that represented visually and kind of reflected back to them.
Yeah, it's always amazing, the community reactions to Looking Through Windows, when elders and community members can see their story. But it's also Looking Through Windows also allows us and other family and community members be able to identify those family members and reclaim them. So I've done that, and I present them in a way that they're named, known individuals, and they're our family members.
People are listening to these recordings driving all around the corner country in Broken Hill up to Tibooburra through that country, which is really beautiful. And there's a lot of stories woven through that place. Is there anything that you feel like you want people to keep in mind while they're travelling through those places?
To acknowledge that you're on Wankamara country, and to be respectful and to tread lightly and only ever leave your footprint. And if you're fortunate enough to go and be taken out to our cultural sites of significance, to our Murras, then, you know, please be respectful of the area and only ever go to those places if you've got a traditional owner with you, so they can guide you through the place and share the cultural knowledge about that place, about that Murra with you. In that way, then you are assured that you've been culturally appropriate and respectful, not only to us as Wankamara people, but also to our ancestors who still live and reside in our country.
Thanks to Dr. Lorena Barker and her family for their generosity sharing stories and history with us. I'm Amy Volkovsky. This episode of Meet the Locals was produced by Bushwitch Productions in collaboration with Jason King Media for the Sturt Steps touring experience. Sturt Steps is a touring route that covers over 1,100 kilometres in Corner Country, outback New South Wales. This project is funded by the New South Wales Government and administered by the Milparinka Heritage and Tourism Association Incorporated. For more information, head to the website at www.sturtsteps.com.au.